Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
What's up, Undisputed listeners? It's your boy, Shay Sharp. I wanted to tell you about my new podcast, Club Shay Shay, where we always do something before two something. Each week, I sit down with a guest for a drink and conversation, and as host and proprietor of Club Shay Shay, I welcome in esteemed guests such as Snoop Dogg, Floyd Money Mayweather, LeVar Ball, Isaiah Thomas, just to mention a few. Whether I'm talking to an athlete, a musician, an actor, or a lifelong friend, Club Shay Shay is a place where people share inspiring and motivational stories about their journeys to prominence. The new episode drops every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to Club Shay Shay now and make sure you never miss a new episode. Now back to Undisputed.
Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
Doncic's late game heroics gave Dallas the win over Boston last night, despite the absence of injured Kristaps Porzingis. Luka hit the go-ahead three with 15 seconds left. Then, after Jaylen Brown tied the score with 9 seconds left, Luka drained a step-back 28-footer. This all came after Mark Cuban denied a report from earlier in the day that the Mavs were allegedly, quote, gauging the trade market for Kristaps Porzingis. Chris, should Dallas try to build a championship team around Luka and Porzingis?
Look, I understand where Mark Cuban and Rick Carlisle also denied it. I get where they're coming from. They have to go out there publicly and deny it. But the fact is this. If the Dallas Mavericks front office is not working the phones quietly to see what Porzingis' value is on the market. In fact, if they're not doing that with everybody not named Luka Doncic, then they're not doing their job. It's as simple as that. And I really like Kristaps Porzingis. I love his game. 7'3", shoots the three, rebounds fairly well, can block shots. I mean, he's a very good player, but he's got one major problem. He can't stay healthy. He can't. I mean, look at this. He missed, and this is not 1 or 2 years. This is his entire career. He missed 16 games his second year in New York, 34 games his third year in New York, the entire season of 2018-2019, 18 games he missed last year, and this year he's already missed 13. And remember last year's playoffs, he missed 3 of the 6 games. They may have beaten the Clippers had Kristaps Porzingis been healthy. So my point is, I'm not giving Porzingis away. I'm not shopping him. I'm not looking to get rid of him. But open to trading him, if I got equal value, you have to be. Because as good as KP is, he just can't stay on the court. I mean, heck, we saw that last night too. And that's the problem with him. That's a great duo if KP's healthy. But can I count on him being healthy? He's had 2 knee surgeries as well. So that's my only concern with Porzingis. So again, I'm working the phones. I'm seeing what his value is. But I'm not just giving him away or shopping him. I'm doing my due diligence. Mm.
Chris, he actually has 2 problems. One is that he can't stay healthy, as you illustrated. And the second is that he's being paid like a max salary player. That's what he has. And while his numbers are good, and as you said, he's a very good player, is he a great player? I don't put him in that category. You guys have probably heard me say it before. Stars are guys who get their numbers. Superstars are guys who get their numbers and they get other guys' numbers. Porzingis hasn't shown me a game that necessarily makes the other guys around him better. And when it comes to being paired with Luka Doncic, Luka is an offensive weapon, mastermind. But he's not all that great defensively. And while Porzingis' defensive numbers are good, he's a situational defensive player. Like, I've seen him in matchups where he's clearly intimidated, where there are certain guys that to look at Porzingis and go, oh, it's my time to eat. This is going to be my night. If I am building around a guy, especially a big, who's supposed to be the backbone of my defense because my other guy is my offensive weapon, that's not going to work if we're going for a championship. And let's face it, the Mavs might have been a dark horse contender for a championship this year. We found out way different. Same with Luka Doncic's chances of winning MVP. All that's by the boards. If they can move Porzingis and that contract, I say you do it. And to your point, if they're not exploring that, if they can't find a sucker on the vine for that deal that started last season, then they are missing the boat, because I do not want to grow old with Kristaps Porzingis' contract.
Mm. You know, for me, I think it's the height. We talk about this Lakers team, and we're talking about the West. And you made the point, Rick, right? They have to be a fast transition team, play small to have success. Well, when you think about Dallas, they're a long team. They got a bunch of long guys, and I think that they're seduced by height. I mean, when you think historically, that's where Sean Bradley played a lot of his best years, was in Dallas, right? They love having long guys, right? So you got Bobo in there, over 7 foot, right? You got Porzingis in there. He's over 7 foot. I know he gets hurt, and he stays hurt, but can he play? Can he give me minutes? Can we give him spot minutes? Can we give him load management? Even if he's not the most elite of elite, if I have that length and that height, this isn't a small running team. They do sets. They set Luka up. They create shots in half-court sets. To me, the reason why it's attractive to keep him, if you're going to keep him, is because of what you have being closer to the basket and allowing Luka to work and operate wherever he wants to work and operate on the court. So it's more or less looking at these guys as they're all role players, and our style of role player is a tall, long, create bad shots, alter shots type of guys. And I think that that's probably what they're looking at as the biggest value of having these type of guys on their team. And that's probably why it's difficult to say we want to let this type of length of a basketball player that fits our style, let them go in a trade.
Yeah, and the problem is, guys, they don't have any first-round picks to attach. Next year's pick is with the Knicks. They can't. It's going to be difficult, Rick, right? I think we'd all agree. To unload Porzingis, you got to find a GM really asleep at the wheel, willing to take on that deal. I'd love to see Bradley Beal next to Luka Doncic, but there's like no scenario where that's even humanly possible. They would destroy in the West. The real problem with Dallas is, you know, they're ninth in the West at 500 team. If Porzingis can only play half the games the rest of the way, and their other pickup, Josh Richardson, has been a nightmare. I mean, he's a shooting guard who can't shoot. He's at 31% from three, like. They lost that trade badly, giving up Seth Curry. Like, I mean, that was just a horrible deal. So Dallas is in a tough spot. And it's funny because I think, guys, last summer we were like, ooh, Dallas, everybody's going to want to play next to Luka. Maybe they get Giannis next to Luka. Like, everybody's going to want to play with him. And all of a sudden it's like, oof, they're not really built to contend. Like, they better get it together to keep Luka in Dallas long term, because this does not look like a team that's remotely close to being one of the better teams in the West.
Yeah, there's
look,
also
I think they'll play better.
Go ahead, Chris.
Go ahead, Rick. Go ahead. Well, I think they'll play better in the second half of the season. I think they'll play better in the second half of the season. They've already played better. Luka's got his 3-point stroke down. We saw that last night, obviously. So I expect improvement. I expect them to move up toward that top eight for sure. Here's the thing with Porzingis, though. He's probably a third best, even if he were healthy, he's probably the third best player on a championship type team. And that would be great because maybe you can get that second guy. The problem, as Rick brought up, is he's paid like a first or second guy. So that is a problem with him as well. So look, again, they're not going to give him away, but if you can find equal value, then I think you can move on from him for sure.
He'd be a great fit for the Lakers.
The other challenge here is there's been a bad vibe around this team. From what I've heard, there's and some of it's just disgruntlement because they were supposed to be a lot better than they were. But I'm watching very closely the relationship between Rick Carlisle and Luka Doncic, because Doncic is the type of offensive player who likes to run the show. And Rick Carlisle is the kind of coach who likes to run the show. And I don't want to read too much into this, but if you guys go back and you look at when Doncic hit the game winner the other night, look at Rick Carlisle on the sideline. Oh, no. He's right there. Doncic hits it, and he turns the other way and walks down the floor. Now, maybe there was something to consider. Maybe he had something to think about. But in a normal circumstance, I would have expected some kind of
emotion,
reaction, connection between the two of them. And there's none of it. So when he comes, he hits this shot, bang. This is the game winner, right? Oh, what? Wait a minute. Where's my coach? Where's he? Oh, I'm going to turn and I'm going to walk down. Like, there's no interaction between these two. And again, I'm not trying to make something that's...
Oh, yes, you are.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, you are.
Yes, you are.
Yes, you are.
But that's exactly what you're doing.
He was clapping, Rick. He was clapping.
He was going the other way.
While he was walking away.
I know the freedom that Doncic wants. And Carlisle is... sometimes it's just a matter of who's really running the ship. Who's the one who's going to make the decisions here in how we play? And Doncic wants to play an open style. LeVar, to your point, like, they would be better, I think, playing fast and playing faster with Doncic. But generally, that's not how they play. And I would dare say that may even be part of why Josh Richardson is struggling, because he would play better in an up-tempo, playing fast system. So it's just something I want to keep an eye on because of the dynamic and the makeup of those two guys.
No mercy.
Hey, Undisputed listeners, I wanted to tell you about our brand new Fox Sports app and website, foxsports.com, reimagined for the modern sports fan. Go ahead, download the new app right now. You don't even have to pause this episode. Every day on the new app and website, you'll see the top stories in sports, plus a rich world of written content, videos, social media, and analytics to give you a 360-degree view of the most important stories of the day. Streaming live TV has never been so easy or elegant. Every Fox Sports game, including all pregame and postgame shows, are just one click away. For the extra invested fan, we also go deep with real-time wagering lines, trending prop bets, win probability, and key player projections. Download the new Fox Sports app or visit www.foxsports.com.
Hey, Undisputed listeners, it's Charlotte Wilder here to tell you about my new podcast with Mark Titus called the People Sports Podcast. It comes out every Thursday, and Mark and I take one of the big stories of the week, and then we go off on tangents you never saw coming. This might mean that we start talking about the Dodgers winning the World Series and end up wondering if Knicks fans deserve happiness. Or begin with LeBron's greatness and end up drafting our ultimate beer league softball team made up of old athletes. Whatever it is, the only rule of the show is that it has to be fun and funny, because these days we could all use as many laughs as we can get. So check it out wherever you get your podcasts and come down weird sports rabbit holes with us. We can't wait to have you.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Title race coming down to the wire. The third-ranked Michigan Wolverines go head-to-head with Trace Jackson Davis and Indiana. That's Saturday, 11:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. The NBA announced the 2021 All-Star Game reserves yesterday, as selected by the league's coaches. And even though Damian Lillard wasn't voted in as a starter by fans, players, and media, he and James Harden headlined the list of reserves. At 20 years old, Zion Williamson became the fourth youngest All-Star behind Kobe, LeBron, and Magic. Rick, what's your biggest takeaway from the All-Star reserves?
There's two, but I'll start with the first one being that NBA players are as susceptible to fake outrage on social media as anybody else. Because all I'm seeing from LeBron James and all the stars is Devin Booker, most disrespected player in the league. How could he not be an all-star? It's as simple as that. Yeah, okay, let's finish the second part of that. Why isn't he an all-star? Well, there's an all-star from the Phoenix Suns. Who's that all-star? Oh, it's Chris Paul. It's LeBron James, one of LeBron James' boys. So if we're going to say that Devin Booker deserves to be an all-star, then the suggestion is who's going to be out? Should he be an all-star ahead of Chris Paul? Why don't we finish the tweet? You still had enough characters that you could have mentioned. He deserved to be the all-star for the Suns over Chris Paul, but we didn't do that. An old rule. If you're going to complain about a guy who didn't make the all-star team, then you got to point out the guy that he should have been on there instead of. And that didn't happen here. And I wonder why that is. I don't like the traffic in conspiracy theories, but fellas, you're going to complain about Devin Booker not being an all-star, then you got to call out your boy Chris Paul and say, you know what, just because you're the president of the Players Association and you fought to have an all-star game in the first place doesn't necessarily mean that you should be an all-star.
Mm.
Yeah, I got some takeaways too. First, let me say this. I've been saying this for years. Apparently, it's falling on deaf ears. I think they should have 15 all-stars in each conference. 12 was fine for 24 teams or less, but now you got 30 teams. It's hard to narrow it down to 12, so you always have snubs, which is fun, by the way, the snubs. But here, look, let me go to the East. I got to be honest. I can't argue with the Eastern Conference reserves for the most part. I was surprised that Nikola Vucevic of Orlando made it. Orlando's 13 and 19, but his numbers are great. 24 points, almost 12 rebounds, 40% from three. But I thought Domantas Sabonis would make it over him. And I think Sabonis deserved it. Indiana's playing well. They're the fourth seed. And Sabonis is 21, 11, 6 assists. I mean, he's playing great basketball. So that's my biggest snub in the East. To get to Devin Booker, who everybody's talking about, look, I think you could talk about DeMar DeRozan, too. San Antonio's winning. DeRozan's playing well. But I get it. And I really love Devin Booker's game. But if I had to pick one of the Suns to make the team, I've got to go with Chris Paul. Chris is leading them in assists with 8 a game. He's leading them in PER. He's giving you almost 17 points a game. Yes, Devin's their leading scorer. But this year, they are 20 and 10. Last year at this time, without Chris Paul, they were 11 and 20. And I know Phoenix looked great in the bubble, and everybody thinks that would have carried over. Who knows? Miami looked great in the bubble. That didn't carry over. So the bubble was a strange place. So I think Chris Paul does deserve to be an all-star. Slightly over Devin Booker. Look, Booker may get in when Anthony Davis is removed because of injury. Hopefully that happens because he does deserve it. Zion's the other guy. People are wondering, does he really deserve to win? New Orleans is not winning. Should he be in there? I'm glad he's in there. I wouldn't have thrown a hissy fit if he didn't make it. But that dude is a scorer supreme. I mean, he just is. He's leading the league in points in the paint. 25 points a game. He needs to improve his rebounding and his defense. I like that they've put the ball in his hands because he actually is a pretty good playmaker, got some court vision. That's helped them improve and win 8 of their last 15. So I got no problem with Zion being there because we know he's going to be there for the next 10 to 12 years at least. So I think for the most part, I'm cool with the way the coaches did this.
Yeah, my biggest takeaway, when you look at Devin Booker getting snubbed, I think it is a legit snub. They're fifth in the West, and they're playing great basketball, and a lot of it is largely in part of Devin Booker. I also would say Devin Booker is a young and budding star. So when you look at it, that takes me to the East. Another takeaway was the amount of first and second appearance all-star reserves, selections. There were 5 out of 7, which I thought was pretty interesting. Means that there may be a possible starting of the changing of the guard. You gotta at some point, I know this might sound crazy. I know this. And you touched on this the other day. Look, Father Time is a free agent that he's on every team's roster, right? So as Father Time begins to catch up to the Chris Pauls who are deserving of being in the All-Star game, the perennial All-Star appearance guys, which we all know, once you become so popular, you're going, no matter what your stats are, no matter what it is, it was like that with the Pro Bowl. You know, guys are going to go that shouldn't necessarily be there, but they're there because of their reputations. Well, to see that many first-time, second-time reserves, and there were it was at 57%. There was 8 total of first and second appearances as All-Star reserve selections. It says to me that my takeaway, you're having to start to transition to those younger guys and start to put the spotlight on them so that you don't lose out too bad when Father Time finally comes and punches the cards of some of these guys that we've grown to love so much through the years watching the basketball game.
All right, I'll be brief because I want to get to the Chris versus Rick steel cage match over Devin Booker and Chris Paul. My two takeaways, I love Zach LaVine and Zion being in the All-Star game. This is a showcase for fans. This is a dunkathon, all alley-oops. Like, it's fun. Like, I want to see guys that can jump out of the gym. I know Trae Young's a little upset he didn't make it. Hey, man, there's always next year. All right, Chris and Rick. I just don't understand how there's a case for Chris Paul over Devin Booker. I don't know who wants to take it away first, but Devin Booker needs to be in this game. Chris Paul has earned it,
this
man.
Is not, this is not Chris versus Rick. This is Chris and Rick versus J-Mac. Don't have a problem with Chris Paul being their all-star selection because the only reason that they're getting an all-star is because of their record. And Chris Paul is the biggest reason why that record is ultimately different. So I don't have an issue with Chris Paul being being their all-star selection. I have a problem with NBA players crying about Devin Booker not being the selection and not identifying why he's not the selection.
Who paying you? Who paying you, Rick? Who paying you?
Now, look,
Devin Booker, stand
up. Y'all watch, if you watch the Suns play, Rick is right on the money. And this is nothing against Devin Booker. Devin Booker is a legitimate all-star caliber player. And if he were in the East, he's probably in the all-star game. Maybe not even just once, but a couple of times. But in the West, it's tough. And look at whoever you taking off. You don't take off Chris Paul. You certainly don't take off Lillard and Donovan Mitchell. So like I said, he may get in because Anthony Davis is hurt.
Right.
But come on, who am I taking off?
But even not fair hurt, point. Like that's my, like Anthony Davis, honestly, with games missed, with where his numbers are, with how he's played this season, is he really an all-star? I mean, talent-wise, he is. Maybe record-wise with the Lakers, but San Antonio, you're going to put Zion in. They're not even in the playoff picture. And you're going to have nobody from San Antonio as the fifth seed represented.
Y'all worked very well.
And you're going to have Anthony Davis in there.
You two worked very well.
The last takeaway is it matters who your coach is.
Like, great job.
Domantas Sabonis deserves to be an all-star. His numbers are the same as last year. Julius Randle. First-time All-Star. Who's his coach? Tom Thibodeau. In those coaches' conversations, who's going to carry more weight? Nate Bjorken, who's the brand-new, out-of-the-box coach for Indiana? Or Tom Tibbs Thibodeau in New York? Yeah. That, to me, is an influence. And by the way, Stan Van Gundy is going to have to explain something to Brandon Ingram as why he stumped for Zion Williamson, because Ingram was an All-Star last year and had almost the same identical numbers. Oh, I'm Brandon. I got a little side eye, like, hey, what happened to me?
It's gonna be
spicy. I
thought
spicy. I was the resident all-star.
Rick spicy is just stirring up all Orleans, this huh? coach drama. Oh, Stan Van Gundy, Rick Carlisle. Maybe next Rick will do more.
No mercy.
The Brooklyn Nets expect Kevin Durant to return from his strained left hammy before the All-Star break. Durant has missed 5 straight games, but his team hasn't dropped a game in his absence, including a win over Sacramento last night. According to Steve Nash, the Nets won't put any pressure on KD and are not trying to rush him back in any capacity. Chris, do the Nets need to bring back KD into the mix before the All-Star break?
Well, obviously they don't need him back to play well and win games, but they do need to get their big three on the floor as much as possible. It's just as simple as that. And I understand that Kevin Durant is easier to drop in a lineup than maybe any superstar in the league just because of the nature of his game and his skill set. However, it still is an adjustment to drop a 30-point score onto a team. Because that he's going to take 18 to 22 shots. That's going to take shots away from other players, mainly the role players. And, you know, so things will have to change. Steve Nash has to get used to his rotation with Durant on the floor. How do the Nets look defensively with Durant on the floor? So, they've played 7 games together. They're 3 stars. And as impressed as I am with them, and I'm very impressed with Brooklyn, I cannot imagine them stepping into the playoffs having played 21, 22 games together as the big three and winning the championship. It's just hard to fathom. It's just something that's never been done in the history of basketball. So I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's hard to think they would win. So if I'm the Nets, I want to get my 3 superstars playing as many of these games going forward as possible. I'm not sending anybody out just randomly. If they're legitimately hurt, fine. But I got to get those guys on the floor. So for that reason, yeah, they need to play the big three together.
It would be hypocritical for me to say that this is an important thing after saying
Thank
that the
you.
Lakers playing the Utah Jazz
Thank
in February
you.
Isn't all that important. So
Way
I can't
Chris.
Go to the wall and say, absolutely, KD has to come back and play before the All-Star break. But to Chris's point, yeah, there's some things to be worked out here. And I know there's kumbaya among the big three in terms of sharing the ball and sharing shots and all of that. The reality is the longer KD's out and the more comfortable Kyrie gets taking 25, 30 shots a game, the harder it is to put that horse back in the barn and say, you know what, there are going to be nights where you're only going to get 17 or 18, especially if they're having success. It's going to be, well, wait a minute, why do we have to rework this thing? And again, I believe that they can have a meeting of minds, and offensively they can straighten it out. The most important thing is, how good can they be defensively? And again, the Nets fans out there who've hammered me for bringing this up, their defensive rating. Look, yeah, they've turned it on at times. But defense and playing defense is a discipline. You can't just do it for 6 minutes, 8 minutes. You can do it during the regular season and win games that way when you're as offensively potent as they are. But when you get into playoff games, you have to have the mental toughness to play defense for long, long stretches when your offense may not be spot on. And they need to develop that muscle collectively over the course of the season. I can't just see it at moments and say they're capable of it. They need to believe in it. They need to believe that they can win games with their defense, because what we've seen is that, you know, it's a tried and true thing, but the reality is, you're playing for a championship. There are times where defense is going to have to carry you. The offense against the best of the best isn't always going to click. They need to develop that and that belief in themselves that they're capable of playing that way. And the more opportunity they get, the better.
You know, I was walking down the aisle and I saw the Rick Bucher Frosted Flakes and the Chris Broussard Fruity Pebbles, and I didn't buy it. I didn't grab the boxes. I didn't want that cereal today. I don't want it. I'm not going to take it. I like how you saved Chris Broussard, because I was going to spank him, because he did say something totally different for the Lakers and what the Lakers need to do, and it ain't no must-win situation, and they don't need to have this and all that, but yet we got to have KD out there with Kyrie and James Harden as much as possible. I found that to be a little bit
Boxes are together for a reason, LeVar.
Hey, listen, I don't know which one of y'all is Kobe and Shaq in this situation. Who's the download force and who's the guy up top that's facilitating? I don't know. It looked like, Rick, you were Kobe right there. But what I'm going to say right here with my man J-Mac, because I know he's with me, is that in this situation, basketball is one of those sports where as you're getting healthier, you can simulate a physical practice. You can simulate what your body's going to have to go through going up and down the court, shots-wise, running to play defense, running to play offense. One thing's for certain, if there's a team that we're looking at in today's NBA right now that could get away with not being a prolific defensive shutdown team, it's the Brooklyn Nets. This situation right here with KD coming back is purely KD wanting to come back and contribute. It's not because they need the wins. It's not because they need to play together and it's going to be hard to put that Kyrie Irving horse back in the barn after he gets shooting all them shots. That's not what this is. KD is watching his team ball out. They're having fun. That everybody thought that, how could James Harden come to Brooklyn and be what he needs to be? He's been a cancer everywhere else he's been, and nobody does well. He's not going to dish the ball off. He's not going to be a guy that facilitates and takes less shots. Oh, but he is. He has been that guy. Assist guy, assist leader? Whoa. Okay, so when KD comes back, KD's just sitting there like, man, I want to get some of this too. I want to get in the mix. 4 games before All-Star break, I just want to get back on the court with my boys. It could just be as simple as that. KD just wants to get back on the court. That's it. There's no tinfoil theory, conspiracy theory, X-Files, all that stuff. There's nothing crazy here. KD just wants to play, and I think he's enjoying watching those guys play. He wants to get some of that. No rush. It'll happen when it happens, and there will be enough shots and enough assists and enough shine to go around for all of them.
I mostly agree with Broussard that dropping KD in is not going to be a problem. He'll fit in seamlessly. And, you know, Rick made a good point about Kyrie Irving having to take a step back. That's, like, I think the number one storyline to watch in the second half of the season. Once KD's back, how cool is Kyrie going to be being the third wheel? But I also want to point out the Nets quietly waived a couple players yesterday, and they're going to start to make some moves here. I would not be surprised if they try to get in the Boogie Cousins situation. They need to get bigger on the inside. And so, Rick, I do believe there is going to be a lot of tinkering going on with the Nets here over the next month or two. And, you know, I do believe, Chris, they're going to probably go into the postseason. My guess would be under 15 games together for KD, Harden, and Kyrie Irving. I would not be surprised if they're just messing around, resting guys. Because, listen, we know they're going to coast in the first round of the playoffs. Second round will be a bit of a challenge. And in the finals, probably against, the Bucks or the 76ers. I'm just telling you, the Nets are going to be a work in progress the rest of the season. I don't think it's a massive issue, though.
J-Mac, are you aware is there going to be another shutdown? Do you know of something that's going to happen that they're only going to get 14 games in?
What's the rush? He's coming off an Achilles. He's got a hamstring now. Like, what are we doing? Why are we rushing Kevin Durant back?
J-Mac, they played 7 games in the first half, and Harden wasn't there for a while. Right. Kyrie went AWOL, and KD's been out with COVID and a hamstring. You think they only going to play the same amount of games over the second half of the season? Let me address LeVar first and then get back to J-Man. LeVar,
yes.
The Lakers have won a championship together.
Fair.
Okay?
Fair enough.
Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving have played 7 games together.
Fair enough.
So it's a big difference.
It's a new team.
I'm not saying.
That is not the same team. That Lakers team is different.
But your two stars, your two engines are the same. Okay. And that's all. And then most of the role players, not all, but most of the role players, coach is the same. They got a new coach, not only a new coach, but a first-year coach at any level. All right? They got 3 superstars that have to blend their game together. They have to figure out how they're going to play on the defensive end. And I'm not saying it's a must that they come back before in the 4 games before the All-Star break. But they, J-Mac, they had better be on the court more than eight times over the second half of the season. Are you crazy? Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni better not be thinking the way you are. That would be a travesty. That would be a fireable offense if they think they can play those guys eight times together over the last 40 games and get to the finals. Come, no, they better be playing them together as much as possible.
Mm. Yeah, I'm still trying to get past my hunger after LeVar took us down the cereal aisle and get back on this. But to your point, Chris, I think this is a really important element here, which is this is important for Steve Nash and the coaching staff to have KD back in the mix, not to figure out how those three are going to play, but how are you going to utilize the rest of the roster in playing those three guys? Who are the role players that you're going to fit in with them? How many minutes are they going to get? What is your rotation? This is your first time through the mill with this crew. And for Steve Nash to figure that out and have the confidence of those three stars going into the postseason, we know how we want to play and we know who we want to play. I think that's all vital discovery for the Nets since we're putting the bar as high as we are. This isn't like they're going to make the playoffs and they're going to win. Like, they're supposed to be in the finals. They're arguably supposed to potentially win a championship. That is no easy road when you're putting together a team for the first time. Consider as good as the Miami Heat were when they put the superstars together down there. It took them a year. It took them a run to be able to ultimately figure it all out. And so that's what the Nets are facing in this situation. And then throw in the fact that you don't have practice like you normally do and all the COVID uncertainty. I think it's the more I think about it, the sooner they can get KD back, the better off they will be.
Yeah, Kyrie said they don't need a coach. I think they'll be fine. We'll see you tomorrow, Rick.
No mercy.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.